All right, hey everybody, let's have an AA meeting. My name is Julie and I'm an alcoholic. Welcome to the Monday night Blue Chip Speakers meeting at the NABA Club, where a member of Alcoholics Anonymous with 1 year or more of sobriety tells his or her story.
My name is Robert, I'm an alcoholic. I was debating whether I should read from my seat, but I thought I'd come on up here since they asked me to. And this reading is based on a passage from page 29 of the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. Each individual, in their own personal stories, describes in their own language and from their own point of view the way they establish their relationship with God. These give a fair cross-section of our membership and a clear-cut idea of what has happened in their lives. We hope no one will consider these self-revealing accounts in bad taste. Our hope is that many alcoholic men and women in our room tonight and listening later on aabluechipspeakers.org, desperately in need, will hear our speaker. We believe that it is only by fully disclosing ourselves and our problems that any of us shall be persuaded to say, yes, I'm one of them too. I must have this thing. I'm grateful that I was given a chance to come up here and do this reading and introduce our speaker. You know, I think you can say a whole lot of things, and you can say I've heard people say a lot of things, but I think what's important in a person's life is to watch what they do. Things are really based on the actions that they take, and I have not known Patty a long time. She has lived in Savannah, moved up to Atlanta several years ago, and in Savannah I would see on her occasions at meetings, but it's sort of from afar. This past year I had an opportunity to do some work on a committee with her, and she may or may not talk about that. But over the year I was able to see her commitment and dedication to Alcoholics Anonymous, and I know that she exhibits it in other areas of her life. And without taking any more time, I want to introduce Patty. Come on up, please.
Hi everyone, I'm Patty, I'm an alcoholic. I asked him if I could speak from my seat, he said no. I've been to this place a lot for a lot of meetings, but I don't think I've ever been to this meeting because when I lived in the Atlanta area, my home group has always been on Monday night, except actually for now. So it's good to be here and I really appreciate Robert and Tim inviting me. My sobriety date is July 4th, 1986, and my home group is the Chapter 3 group in Sandy Springs. And I am an active member of Alcoholics Anonymous, and for that I'm very grateful because I think that's why I stand here before you today sober. That's a neat reading that you start with, and it's funny, I've tried to look in the literature before I speak to sort of get an idea of what I want to talk about, and I wasn't sure when I was going to fit this in, so I'm going to start with it because it kind of ties into what you read. And in the big book, right after the 11th step, it says, we alcoholics are undisciplined, and that describes me very well. So we let God discipline us in a simple way that we have just outlined, and it's talking about the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, which you referred to. And then in the ninth tradition, it talks about this discipline thing again, this word that I really don't like. It says, so we of AA do obey spiritual principles. First, because we must, and ultimately because we love the kind of life such obedience brings. Great suffering and great love are AA's disciplinarians. We need no other. And so that really describes my drinking and my recovery, really. But let me tell you a little bit more about it. I got sober when I was 23 and I was living in Maryland, which is where I grew up. You know, I drank for, I think I started drinking when I was around 12. The first time that I drank to get drunk. And that was really what I wanted to do. And I had sips here and there of stuff, you know, my parents' drinks. And we would sometimes have cold duck on special occasions, and I'd get a little sip of that. And when I was sick, if I was lucky, I'd get some Irish whiskey. You know, but that was really my experience with drinking until I decided I wanted to drink and I wanted to get drunk. And I did. My friends and I put our money together, and we got a bottle of Mad Dog 2020, and I drank most of it. And I got really drunk and really sick, and I'm sure I blacked out and passed out, and I know I threw up on the front lawn where I did many times after that. And I thought it was fantastic, by the way. Those things, the getting sick and all that, was a price that I was willing to pay to feel the way I felt when I drank that alcohol. And so at 12 years old, there's not a whole lot of opportunity, or at least there wasn't for me, to drink, but I did every chance I got, which was pretty much weekends. And it was kind of the thing that kids do. We'd put in all of our allowances, or, you know, very shortly after I took my first drink, I learned how to steal. Imagine that. I would steal from my mother and or whoever I could steal from her. She was the person at that time. However I needed to, I would get my couple dollars to put in so that we could buy some alcohol so that I could get drunk. Now I have 5 brothers and sisters. And I have 3 older ones, and at that point they were all teenagers. And so they were out partying with their friends and getting beer and having a good time, and I wanted to be like them. That's really what I was looking for, is that lifestyle where it appeared they had no cares, they had fun. You know, I wanted what they had, so that's why I was drinking. And it wasn't long after that that I went from an A student at school, A, B student, to a B, C, to a C, D, to a barely getting by, which was primarily because I didn't go to school. It wasn't necessarily because my grades were bad. I didn't have any grades. That was the problem. And so, and back then, you could miss a third of the school year and still pass. That doesn't happen today, but... Now your parents get arrested when that happens. So I was barely getting by in school, and I was drinking as much as I could and trying a lot of other things. By the time I was 15, I fell in love for the first time and got pregnant at 16. Actually, I moved out first and then got pregnant, and was a parent by the time I was 17, as soon as I turned, a couple weeks after I turned 17, or 1 week. The funny thing is, and I didn't know this till I got sober and learned about alcoholism, when I met this guy, who was the love of my life for a short period of time, there were a lot of those, I knew at 15 when I met him that I was not a very attractive drinker, because I threw up all the time. I mean, I got really drunk, passed out, got sloppy, threw up, and I knew that. And it didn't matter to me until all of a sudden there was a guy there that I wanted to impress, and now all of a sudden that is, you know, not very attractive. So I actually didn't drink a whole lot around him. And I did a lot of other things, but I didn't drink a whole lot. And I realize now that sort of that cunning, baffling, and powerful nature of alcoholism. And once I ended that relationship in my mind, not physically, but once I ended it, I didn't care anymore. And I drank the way I wanted to drink. And it was like a switch flipped. So when I was 18, I ended that relationship, and I picked up drinking the way I'd left off. And not that I ever stopped. I just wasn't drinking the way I like to drink. And I picked that right back up. My son was a year old. I was unemployed. I didn't have a driver's license. I'm a high school dropout and on my own, and I've got a child to take care of. So the good thing is I'm pretty resourceful. So I got 2 jobs, not just one. Finally got a driver's license, got a car, pulled it all together, and probably lost it all in about 6 months. Pulled it all together again, got another job, another car, another place to live, and then I would lose it all in about 6 months. And so that's kind of the way I lived. I could hold it together for a short period of time, and then it would sort of fall apart, and I'd have to pull it all together again. And, you know, for me, being in my early 20s, it's pretty easy. Not wasn't easy, but, you know, I can do that. I don't know how much longer I would have lasted doing that. But by the time I got here, my life was... really going from job to job. I moved from place to place. I think I moved 10 times in like 6 years. You know, I lived in places without any electricity or gas because I couldn't afford to pay a bill, yet I could drink every night. This child of mine who, you know, at this point is a couple years old, is going with me to all these places. I am not providing him any kind of parenting. He's getting a roof over his head and some food, and that's about it. And the food was the same. You know, we had cereal, and when I didn't have power, we had a cooler with milk in it, and we had maybe some other cold food that I could fit in the cooler along with my pints of vodka and Kahlua that were in the cooler. And we would go out to whatever restaurant I worked in to eat because I would get free food. And that's how I fed him. And then when I went to work, I always worked nights, and I did that on purpose so that I'd have a babysitter and I could drop him off, go to work, and say, you know, I'm going to be back late. Maybe I'll just pick him up in the morning. And then I would stay out all night drinking and find my way back in the morning. One of the amends that I had to make was to his grandmother, who spent many a nights and days worrying because I would come to pick him up reeking of alcohol, stumbling, and I would take him out of her house and drive him home. You know, I don't know why she allowed that, but she probably felt she didn't have a choice, and I know it scared her to death every time I did that. And it took me many years into sobriety to realize that and the amends that were due for that. And the words that were due, the living amends was already underway, but there were some words that needed to be said, and those words were said. So what happened is, about 2 months before I got sober, my sister came to me, one of my sisters, and said, you know, I'd like for you and Billy, my son, to move in with me. And my first reaction was, I can't do that, I just signed a lease. Well, you got a little understanding of my history. Signing a lease was not responsibility that I took very seriously. I just threw it out there as an obstacle. But what she said to me is, I will help you have a family life for Billy. So by this time, he's six. And I knew I was a horrible mother. I knew it. And there was nothing I could do about it, and I couldn't tell you or anybody else. But I knew it. And I tried to make it look on the outside that everything was okay, and it wasn't okay. I knew that when I would take him to school during the day, in the morning, he would get out of school, and the bus would bring him to the house, and I wasn't there, and the bus would drop him off in kindergarten, and the bus would come back and pick him up because his mother wasn't home. I wasn't working. I'm just out having a good time before work. And I can't tell you how many times either I would pull up and he was sitting out on the curb, or I would get there and I had missed him because the bus had come back around to get him and took him back to school. And that's the kind of mother I am. There's story after story after story about what kind of mother I was at that point in time. And I knew that. That was all what, you know, I kept inside of me that nobody else knew. So when she said that, it got my attention. And what I heard her saying is, this is your last chance, and if you want us, your family, to help you, you better say yes. So I agreed to it, and we had some rules. And now I don't like rules. And the rules were that we're going to go grocery shopping every week and buy food and have meals at home. And we're going to, I have to get a real job, which means a daytime job, preferably in an office instead of a bar. And so we're going to have dinner every night. We'll take turns cooking dinner. We'll have food. We'll buy a case of wine a week. We'll buy our cigarettes with our groceries, because I was smoking then. And you can only smoke pot after Billy goes to bed. So there's the rules, okay? And we had to do a budget. I got a job working in a bar during the day. Very quickly after starting that job, I proved that I just couldn't get home for dinner. I just couldn't. And I tried. I would have one drink and think, this is all I'm going to have. My friends would come by. And I don't know about here, because I didn't drink in Georgia, but in Maryland, happy hour starts at 5 o'clock. I couldn't get home, so I couldn't meet my commitment about the dinner. I would drink the whole case of wine, not just my half, and my sister had to start taking her half over to her boyfriend's house. I'm not really sure about the smoking pot thing, if I broke that rule or not. I'm sure that I did, but that was not a big deal compared to the others. You know, it's funny, when I hit bottom, my circumstances were probably better than they had been, just physically around me, than except that I couldn't live with the fact that I couldn't live up to those rules. And I, you know, that was sort of now somebody else is seeing that I can't do what normal people do. I just can't. I can't take care of my son. I can't keep simple commitments. And, you know, it wasn't, I can't tell you how many times I didn't have a car, or I had a car and I had no insurance, or I didn't have a job, I didn't have a place to live. None of that was going on. I think I actually had insurance. I used to steal the little stickers and put them on my car so I didn't have to get my own insurance. But I think I really had my own insurance. I had a car and I had a job, and I had a nice place to live. My sister helped provide that. And so my son has his own room. He's not like sleeping on the couch in the one bedroom place that I have to live or anything like that. And so but I couldn't deal with the fact that I couldn't live up to the expectation. That really was my bottom. And what happened was not like any, you know, was not different than any other day. I decided the day before I ended up in detox that I wanted to go out with one of my girlfriends. It was her birthday, and we have to go celebrate. And she has a son about the same age as mine. And so I asked my sister if she would babysit, and of course she said no. And so we put the boys to sleep, and off we left. We just left. Again, not unusual. I had done that before. We were out drinking all night, and when I came home, I called in sick to work. I think I was supposed to be there at 9 or something. I called in sick, got my son off to school, and I overdosed. And I don't remember thinking, I wanted to kill myself, or I don't remember thinking really at all. For whatever was going on, it was a way for me to get help, and it was. And the boyfriend I had at the time, and I didn't even go into all that stuff, but the boyfriend I had at the time did probably the nicest thing he ever did for me, and that was to call my sister and say, you got to come home. She knew exactly what to do. She had already checked out the local detox. She took me there, and when she dropped me off there, my boyfriend left my house and promptly got locked up again. And so he went off to jail, and I went off to treatment. I'm very grateful for that, because it took me out of that lifestyle long enough for me to learn about alcoholism and understand that I am an alcoholic. I really thought I was a bad person. I thought this was it. This was my lot in life. And I had a very hopeless, horrible sort of life, and the only way to change the way I felt from that was to go to complete oblivion. That was my option. I could either be hopeless or oblivious. When I got into, I went to a detox and then to a rehab, it gave me a little bit of time away from that so I could get some perspective. And I will be forever grateful for Father Martin's Chalk Talk, if any of you have ever heard of that. And I one of these days I'm going to look at that again. He talked about the disease of alcoholism in a way that I could understand, and in a way that really brought me great relief. I am grateful today to be an alcoholic because there is a solution for me, and I have applied the principles that I've learned in this program, and my life couldn't be more polar opposite today from when it was then. So after I went to detox, it took me a while to start changing, because, you know, the change really starts not necessarily when we put the drink down, but when we pick up the tools of this program and start working these 12 steps that are behind me, and then learn how to apply the 12 traditions to our life. And that's a process that takes a while, but you have to start. Well, it took me a while to start, because I was enjoying my life and my new friends. And for a while, I really enjoyed the fellowship for the first year. And I was the same old person, just not drinking. And I, you know, and just to illustrate that a little bit, the day I got out of treatment, which so I'm probably like 60 days sober by that day, my old drug dealer picks me up. I arranged that. We went down to the county courthouse because my best friend that I last drank with had a custody hearing for her son, and she wanted me to be her character witness. And yeah, it gets worse from there. And then thank God I didn't get called into that courtroom. Oh my gosh. So I was willing, though. And so while I'm there, the drug dealer just dropped me off. But you know, I had no business being in that car with him. And so while I'm there, I run into my old attorney slash what would you call him? Sugar daddy, maybe. He's the guy that got me out of trouble all the time. And I was having an affair with him, and he was married. And which, quite honestly, when I was drinking, so my thinking was so off, I thought that was a good thing, because I don't have to worry about any expectations, because that whole discipline thing. And so, you know, trust me, today I realized that was really wrong, but that's the way I thought. And so he's there, so he's going to take me home. Well, he has to go by his office and do some things, so here I am stranded. Now, in the meantime, my sister and my son are at home cooking me a welcome home dinner, and I'm 2 hours late because I'm out doing all this stuff with people I have no business being with. That pretty much colored my first year. You know, I can go through scenario after scenario, but that was kind of it. And then I started hearing about the steps, and I started hearing about the steps because people were asking me, have you done a four-step yet? Have you done a four-step yet? And I'm like, no, no, no. And then, you know, when you got to do something, how every meeting you go in, they're talking about it. You know how that happens? Well, that was happening. And the final straw was when I went to get gas one morning before work. The guy at the gas station says, have you done your four-step yet? And so that really was it. I knew him and he worked there. He was a friend. But that was kind of it. And I finally started writing a four-step. And by that time, I had asked a woman to sponsor me that really had what I wanted. I had several false attempts at sponsorship. And so I did finally ask this woman, Becky, to be my sponsor. And I asked her because to look at her, she looked clean, and I didn't feel clean. And she was nice, and she didn't curse in meetings like I did. And she just seemed like she had it all together, and she talked. She talked the talk, and she looked like she walked the walk. Now, I didn't spend enough time around her to know if she really did, but she looked like she did. Thank goodness she did, actually. So I ended up working the steps with her. And the neat thing about that is she was a lot like me, and she had become someone that I wanted to become. And she had become that someone by working the steps. And she had principles in her life, and she was living a responsible life. By that point, she was married and had a child. I think she probably was sober 7 or 10 years by that time. And that gave me a lot of hope, because I really didn't feel like I could be any better of a person than I was. And so I started working the steps with her, and I'll never forget the day I did my fifth step with her. I left there really feeling like I belonged in AA. And I wasn't quite sure if I did or I didn't. I had nowhere else to go, so I stayed. But after that day, I knew I did. And I have abused a lot of drugs, and I was had that whole drug, alcohol, what am I thing going to. And you know, when I left her house that day, I was clear about where I was and what I was and where I needed to be and where my recovery was. And, you know, it wasn't too long after that that I got an opportunity to move to Georgia, and I'll speed this up, because I was starting a career and I didn't even know it. Got a job after about a year working with that same sister. The only reason I got a job is because they were desperate to hire someone. It was a healthcare company in Annapolis, Maryland, and they were growing very rapidly, and they needed someone to work in their payroll department. And I had a little teeny bit of office experience. I mean, a little bit. And so they hired me based on my sister's reference. That was it. And that turned out to be a career for me. And I still work in that field today. And I had no idea. You know, I learned here that I'm to be responsible and to show up every day. I had a little trouble getting up in the morning. It took me a couple of years to sort of change that from nights to days. But I was responsible, and I went to work, and I worked hard while I was there, and I did everything they asked me to do. And before I knew it, they were asking me to do more and more, and they were giving me more and more responsibility. Turns out I have some skills, actually. I didn't know. You know, I did pretty well, and I decided that if I was going to further my career, I had to go to college. By this time, I'm 26, 27 years old and trying to figure out how do you start college. I don't remember most of my high school years. And I quit in the 12th grade. Luckily, I did take a GED, so I at least didn't have to revisit that. But I did have to take some remedial courses. And I believe I started when I was about 28 years old. And it seemed like a long road ahead. And actually, it was. It was 12 years to get an undergraduate degree. Because by this time, my son is growing up. And then I met someone and got married in sobriety. And I ended up having my daughter. And at the whole time, I'm working full-time and going to school. You know, I come back to what it says in this book about us being undisciplined, and with God's help, we can be disciplined. And with God's help, I was able to not only work full-time and raise my children, but to go to school so that I could even further better myself, and also to get very involved in AA and keep myself in the middle of AA through it all, because I'm a firm believer today that without AA and without being in the middle, I can't do any of it. And I was always taught that. And so I have always kept a service position, whether it's in my home group or in the district zone or the area. And I can remember one time when I didn't have one, and it was for a year. And I did it on purpose because it was sort of crunch time to finish that undergraduate degree, and I was taking extra classes, and I just needed to get it done. Doesn't mean I didn't go to a lot of AA meetings, because I did. I just didn't have a service commitment, and that was a purposeful decision. Other than that, I always have had one. And it's not because I think AA needs me. It's because I need AA. AA does not need me. I need AA. And the way that I keep myself in the middle is to have a commitment, because you taught me how to be responsible. And if I tell you I'm going to do something, for the most part, I'm going to do it. And I, you know, I have been very blessed. And so as I've worked the steps, learned how to incorporate the traditions, life has, you know, taken all of its twists and turns as it does. It gets, you know, hard sometimes, really great other times. One day at a time, I have accumulated a family that trusts me, friends that I love and support me through everything, and I was able to finish that college degree and then go on to get a graduate degree. You know, I can remember several times, you know, me calling my sponsor, well, a lot of times, me calling my sponsor and saying, I'm so tired of doing homework all weekends. I don't want to do this anymore. I can't keep doing this. I want a life. Everybody else has a life but me. She would just say, hang up the phone and do your homework. Or, you know, call your father. This is how he got his education. She would just keep reminding me that I can do this. I can do this. And I would push forward. And that's been the case for everything in my life. I have a sponsor today who I've had for 27 years. And, you know, she is a sponsor, but she's part of my family, too. And I don't want to say she's not a sponsor anymore, because she's the one I call when I'm, you know, when life is getting hard. You know, she's the one I call. But she has been there through everything. When I ask her, and even when I don't ask her to be there, she just always seems to know, and she's there. You know, I have, after I moved to Georgia, that career has taken me all over the state of Georgia in various jobs, and so I've moved, and actually I tried to get another sponsor once. I moved to Albany, Georgia. Has anybody ever been there to Albany? Albany. It's in southwest Georgia, and it is real Georgia. This is nothing like the real Georgia here. So I thought it was a little bit of a culture shock moving to Stone Mountain from Maryland. Wow. Albany was a culture shock moving from Metro Atlanta to Albany. But I was, at the time I was getting divorced, and I thought I need to have a sponsor where I am. My sponsor lives up here, and it lasted, maybe 3 months. And I just couldn't do it. I had too much history, and so I made a commitment to her and to myself that I would do my part to keep my relationship with her current. And I kept her as a long-distance sponsor, actually, for the next 10 years. And we now live in the same area, so it's fine now. But that relationship has been really, really important. She has taught me so much. And, you know, from the person I described when I got here to the lady I've become, she gets a lot of credit because she was already that lady when I met her. Now, I'm not sure she was always that lady, but by the time I met her, she knew how to behave like a lady. And she taught me how to behave like a lady because I didn't know how. And I learned that here. So she's really the one that taught me that. And she's a part of my family. You know, every big event, she's there. And so, you know, today, I am married to a man that I love and respect, which is different for me. I have two beautiful children. That son of mine is now 36. He's married and he has 7 children of his own. And they trust me to watch their children. I told you what kind of parent I was. They trust. Now, I don't. Maybe desperation. They do have 7 kids. But no, I'm just kidding. When they had 1 and 2, they trust me to watch them. And I just, that amazes me, that the way that I took care of him, and I am now allowed to care for their children. And his oldest is just like him, and it just really makes me happy. he's very difficult. And I used to think it was because I was such a bad young mother. No, he was just difficult because his son is just like him. And then I have a daughter who is, she's 21, and she's just a really good girl, you know. And I, you know, my son gave me a lot of challenges when he was a teenager, and, you know, he's had his ups and downs. He's doing great now and has been for some time, but, you know, he took me through that whole parenting of a teenager and how difficult that can be. He really showed me about all of that. And my daughter has been quite the opposite. You know, I'm grateful for that, but I also know that whatever happens, I have the tools to cope with it and deal with it. And she is quite a normal child. She actually went to high school and was involved in her high school and then went right to college. I didn't do that. My son didn't do that. He went to college in his late 20s, just like I did. He dropped out of school and went into the Navy and dropped out of the Navy. So he had his struggles and ended up turning out okay. And she didn't do any of that. She just was like a normal kid. She is like a normal kid. It's weird. You know, as far as I know, neither one of them are alcoholics. You know, I guess more will be revealed as life goes on, but it doesn't appear that way now. But, you know, we have 7 more that might be, so who knows? And, you know, that's another reason why I stay involved in AA, is because I want it here for the next person. And, you know, that first year when I was just enjoying the fellowship, there were people setting up the meetings. There were people making coffee. There were people printing, you know, getting meeting lists out so I knew where that next meeting was going to be that I was going to. There were people organizing dances so that I had something to do on the weekend. And I was enjoying all of that. I wasn't helping, but I was enjoying all of that. And I'm very grateful for that because that kept me sober for a while. And, you know, I try to do that for others. And that's another reason why I try to stay involved. The you know, life is good right now, and I have come so far. I'm just nothing like the person I was when I got here. But I also know that if I get away from AA and decide I can do this on my own, that same thinking will come right back. and I know that. I've sort of danced around that a little bit here and there, and I haven't gotten too close, but I know it's there, and I hear it from other people, and so I do my best to stay away from that. And how I do that is I stay in the middle and I keep doing the basics that we talk about, which is going to meetings, talking to my sponsor, talking to other alcoholics, praying, and working the program. And I from that, God has given me that discipline, and I'm really grateful, and I have great love in my life. I didn't have great love when I got here, and I want it. I don't want it to go away, and I know that I have to keep doing what I was taught to do to keep it. Occasionally I feel like I'm suffering, you know, greatly suffering. You know, it talks about great love and great suffering, and but honestly, it's nothing compared to what it was like when I was drinking. If I keep coming to meetings, I can be reminded of that on a regular basis. If I'm not going to meetings, I'm not going to remember that on my own. It's very easy to forget what it was like if I'm not here listening to others share. So that's why I keep coming back. And I really appreciate you listening to me, and thank you so much for letting me share.
Thank you so much. That was really wonderful. Thank you. Karen, will you please give out the chips?
Hi, guys. I'm Karen, and I'm an alcoholic. We have a chip system here at the Navajo Club, and to mark our time in sobriety, the first chip we offer is a white chip for those of you who are wanting to try our way of life one day at a time, for those of you who are coming back from being out trying some new experimentation. Anybody want a white chip? Anyone else? For 30 days, we have a silver chip. 90 days, we have a red chip. Anybody have 90? Nope. 6 months, we have yellow. 9 months, we have green. We have the blue for years or multiples.
My name is Richmond. I've been living here a month. I moved from California. Originally, I'm from here. And I didn't start drinking until I was in my late 40s. I moved to Moscow, representing American pharmaceutical companies. And a lot of the business, well, most of the business here was go down to lunch and there was a lot of vodka drinking. And I just started drinking vodka. And after 5 years of living there, and I came back, first thing in the morning, I wanted to drink. I wanted to drink. And it was a miracle that there was a man that worked for me who's a CPA who was involved with AA. And I just called the AA, and I found out there was a meeting. And, you know, I went into a meeting, and I met a fellow who said he had 16 years, and his sons had never seen him drinking. And I realized that that's what I wanted. And that was like what was really important to me. I don't know how I got into the alcohol. You know, it wasn't like an early thing. I would get drunk, but, you know, not get drunk, you know, not drink for a few weeks. But boy, when I came back from Russia, I was an every day, every morning, every night drinker. Blackout drinker, the whole thing, you know. And what keeps me sober today is going to meetings, fellowship, following the steps. But it's really you people who keep me sober. And that's why I go to a lot of meetings. I've been trying to find meetings. But I like this meeting at NABA on Monday night. I come. This is probably my fourth meeting now. And thank you very much for helping me stay sober.
How many years?
This is for 1 year.
Woo! It's for a blue chip. Well, that would be me. Thank you. Wait a minute.
I'm Karen.
I'm an alcoholic.
Yeah, I get to say something.
Oh, no.
This is Karen. She's an alcoholic.
This happens to me all the time. I ask people to do the chips, and it's like, actually, their birthday. You should say, no, I can't.
Why?
Anyway.
You never say no on anything.
She's great. Here's her chip.
Thanks.
This is number three.
Wow. I'm not even going to cry this year. That's a switch. I have a sponsor who has a sponsor.
I go to meetings. I work with other women. I did the steps the way they're outlined in the book, a lot faster than I thought I was going to. And, you know, I just trust God and cleaned up my own house, and I'm working with others, and hopefully I'll keep doing it. Thank you. Okay, now we're at the white tip. Anybody else want to try this way of life one day? There you go. Anybody? Okay, God bless you for the tips you hold. Thank you.
Thank you. That was great. Thank you, one and all, for joining the Blue Chip Speakers meeting tonight.
Down the shell and the world, you're my angel child.